This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network, and I am your host, Mark. And in this episode, we discuss something I have no idea about. How is that different from any other episode, you ask? Well, in this one, I'm joined by Benjamin Wright of Benjamin Jane and Jeremy Toback of Renee and Jeremy and Brad. We all got together to talk about music and psychology. That's a pretty broad brush, but since Benjamin is a psychologist during the day, I felt we were in good hands. We begin by asking the question, are there common psychological traits among creative people? But we quickly move on to other topics like music's role in psychological healing, how your mindset changes when you add people to the writing process, and how one song can be interpreted differently between kids and adults. I learned what a morphogenetic field is, how a breakdown on tour changed how Jeremy looks at things, and Benjamin's thoughts on psychology today, as a creative as well as a medical professional. This conversation goes all over the place, and I know I learned a lot. And I also got to listen to a bunch of great new music. Check out the latest Renee and Jeremy album, Shout, and the new Benjamin Jane album, Broken, on Spotify, Bandcamp, or wherever you listen to or buy music. Look for new solo music from Jeremy Toback as well. Follow Jeremy at Jeremy Toback and at Renee and Jeremy. Check out reneeandjeremy.com for more info. Benjamin is at Benjamin Jane Music and benjaminjane.com. We are Performance ANX, performanceanx.threadless.com, and ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety. Now let's get all up into each other's minds with Jeremy Toback and Benjamin Wright on Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network. You look like you're hanging out outside.
I am. I got two kids.
No. All right, hey, Jeremy. What's up?
Hey. How are you?
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, man. It's been a while.
All right. Jeremy, meet Benjamin. Benjamin, Jeremy.
Hey, Benjamin.
Hey, man. How are you?
So just a little background. I had Benjamin on during the his last album, Theater, which was really cool. Really. Those guitar tones just stick with me. And it was just
cool, man.
And then Jeremy from Renee and Jeremy and Brad and his solo stuff. And so I'm absolutely venturing into areas I don't have a damn clue about. I know nothing about psychology, psychiatry, anything, but
I don't either.
Then this will be an excellent show. All right, Jeremy, you are the resident expert now.
But not really. I definitely am into some modalities, but like of healing and and transformation. But they're, I don't think you get a degree. Well, you might be able to get a degree, but I don't have shit.
Yeah. So none of us know what we're going to be talking about tonight.
I got some opinions on some shit.
That's all we need.
Well, I think it just speaks to the old, the older you get, the less you realize you know, right?
For sure.
That too, right?
That is absolutely true. I love having guests on the second and third time because we kind of get past the, well, this is what you did and this is your new album, and we're going to get into different topics. And so this topic was actually suggested to me by Howard Wolfing. So Howard's a great guy. Jeremy, you haven't met Howard yet, but Howard is a great guy. He's been a huge friend of this podcast in helping set up interviews with so many incredible artists and all. And he knows the way I work in that when I have somebody on a second time or more, we've already done the whole history the first time they come on. So there's no point in doing a repeat. So when we have somebody on a second time, we like to find a different topic. And so I'm assuming Howard picked this based on Benjamin's day job and background.
Now people are going to know that I'm a fraud.
Okay. So what is Benjamin's background?
So, Benjamin, I'll let you explain this one.
Yeah, I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which really in today's world means like a psychopharmacologist, essentially, with a few, with some other elements to what we do. But I could go off about this for a while. Maybe the question that is being asked will allow me to do it later. We'll see.
We'll see. And if not, just feel free to just jump in and take this wherever you want to go, both of you guys, because this is the Wild West for me, because I don't know anything about this, but I think it's really interesting. And I guess maybe the way to start this off is to discuss music and psychology and how they work together. I know that a lot of creative people use music as a way to deal with psychological issues. And I know that music can also be used to help deal with psychological issues. So it goes on both ends. So I guess my first question is in things that you guys have read or studied, and maybe Benjamin, this one goes to you first. Is there any common trait to people who are more creative? Like, for example, serial killers. They say that serial killers almost tend to have like head trauma, bedwetting, animal cruelty. Is there anything, maybe not that extreme, but is there anything common trait within the creative communities?
I would say the polar opposite of the serial killer, who's a sociopath who doesn't have any empathy or ability to relate to other individuals' feelings, doesn't have compassion or guilt or remorse. Mm-hmm. I think that we would exist in the opposite end of that spectrum, where I think you find a lot more empathy and compassion in people that are creative, or also in the field of psychology or psychiatry in general.
Yeah, I like that.
That's it's amazing. That's a very simple answer, and it never occurred to me, which is, you know, not unusual, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at both fields too, like I've actually been asked this a lot during this release about why psychiatry and music as the two major parts of my life. And yeah, there obviously is. I mean, you kind of alluded to it or directly stated it in the intro to the question, is that they're both involved in healing. I would say that, and this speaks to my bias and bent against modern day psychiatry in general, is I think probably music does more healing than psychopharmacology does.
Wow. That's deep.
I can understand that, though. I mean,
I have that bias.
And me personally, yeah. I mean, and you know, for me personally, if I can do something besides take, you know, some kind of pharmaceutical, I'm going to do that first.
Yeah, so. And what I don't want to do is put myself out there by ostracizing the field in which I work.
Right.
I have definitely seen medications save people's lives. I just think that it's in the society we live in nowadays, it's the expectations of timelines of recovery and get your together to get back to production or whatever value you add to society needs to be quick. And so the fix is streamlined to something that's not necessarily always the answer, not frequently the answer. The answer is generally that we're all struggling or suffering with something in our environment that needs to be looked at. I mean, a lot of philosophers think that major depression stops us in our tracks to say, you ain't going, you know, you're not going the right way. Take a minute and think about if you're living a truth or what's not resonating right. So I think that's where music really helps, because music takes us inward and we can find compassion and reflection in that experience. But medications certainly have saved my patients' lives as well. But
I think one of the issues I have is just the amount of money in it. I mean, you'll see commercials for medicines, you know, during sitcoms, sporting events. You don't even know what it's for. It just says, ask your doctor if you need this.
And you're like, what is this for, doc? Should I take it?
Yeah. Hey, doctor, do I need X, Y, and Z? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
The irony there is that in my ghost writing job, like I end up writing behind the scenes, not on the creative of pharma ads, but to help directors get the pharma ads.
Wow.
which a lot of it, I'm just like, this is
creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, we're all, I mean, some of us are more explicitly tied in, but like, you know, my viewpoint is that a lot of the medication isn't necessary. Some of it, you're just saying like, wow, you're actually creating fear around this so that you can then create the demand for the medicine.
Yeah.
Which, you know, this is not my field of expertise at all, but I do have a bias. And
you have a bias and a little bit of history in that. And part of the reason I wanted to have you on was because you do things like ghostwrite for other people. And I wanted to know a little bit about the psychology of that. You know, how do you're not writing your own stuff. You know, you're writing for someone else. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Before you skip over this ad, give me 1 minute. Like most podcasts, I pick sponsors carefully and I use the products that advertise here. Pure Spectrum CBD is a product that has been really beneficial for me. They have a wide variety of great products that can be used on a daily or as needed basis. I've been using the tincture every day and it's been wonderful for easing anxiety. And I absolutely love the isolate. I use it instead of acetaminophen or ibuprofen, and it's worked so well for the relief of aches and pains. They also have soaks, lotions, salves, gummies, and more, plus an entire line for fitness recovery. They even have products for your pets. See everything they offer at purespectrumcbd.com. And if you have questions, they're there to help. They helped me when I had no idea where to start. After you fill your cart, use code PERFORMANCEANX for 15% off your purchase. Pure Spectrum CBD, Pure Spectrum CBD, Pure Spectrum CBD.
So, okay, I feel completely unequipped to talk about anything official in terms of like...
There's nothing official about anything concerning this podcast ever.
...of psychology or psychiatry. What I can say is this. I mean, you're asking me about ghostwriting. I was going to take another point of entry.
Yeah, go for it. We can come back to
it. Just to give background of why I said yes to this, which is that even though I'm a recording artist and I have been for a long time, my initial entree into music was very much, even though I loved music and love pop music, I was coming at it from a sort of spiritual vibrational background. I got, as a young adult, got very into Hazrat Inayat Khan, who's a Sufi mystic who has written specific books on music and vibration. And I don't want to get too woo-woo, but I think I came into this life with this orientation. I don't know where the heck I would have gotten it. I got the birds from my parents, BYRDS.
Right.
Just not. My dad was an atheist. So I was interested from very early on in how I was going to incorporate uplifting vibrational modalities into song. And I was trying to do that, probably struggling for a long time, until eventually, like, Renee and Jeremy, I think, was the first time that I actually sort of was able to tap into. This is my son coming in.
I got two.
Too.
That's fine.
Good. Ezra King Toback. Hello, welcome to the pod. Without being too meandering, but Renee and Jeremy, when we started making these lullabies for kids, that was, I think, the first time that I was able to bring it all together and put that into the music with Renee, obviously, with her participation as a partner in it.
Wanna fly like an eagle to the sea. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. Wanna fly like an eagle till I'm free. Oh, through the revolution, feed the babies. Don't have enough to eat.
And that kind of feedback that we got from those records was that there was something going on here that was special in terms of the way that it was interacting with the families and the kids and helping them relax, and not in any sort of new age way. We're just using songs, like not new age music, but, and that continues to be a strong orientation in whatever kind of music that I'm.
Well, you're coming at it at an angle that's probably more important than any aggregate of healing over time. It's probably more important from that angle than any westernized medicine when it comes to mental health. I'll stay there because that's where I work. Mm. But, you know, I was just at a psychedelic forum, learning about, you know, the power of psychedelics. And one of the interesting things about the hangups that we have in our field with that is this model doesn't allow for traditional medicine, traditional histories to play a role in providing evidence or supporting certain practices. It has to be like the, you know, standardized Western random double blind placebo trials, or else it doesn't mean anything, even if 2,000 years of vibrationist music has proven to be.
Right. We've got all these ancient traditions.
Right.
And, you know, you've got people, I mean, we're getting hip to meditation, right? That has benefits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there've probably been studies on, I don't know, have there been studies on prayer? I don't know.
Definitely on meditation. And right. One might think meditation and prayer is probably, I mean,
fairly similar.
Related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you bring up the studies, and that's one of the other things that fascinates me is the different aspects of this. Like, you know, music can be used for psychological therapy. There's, you know, it can be used as an outlet to help someone psychologically, but it's also can help the listener. Like, music can make for a better workplace, can aid in sleep, and, you know, down to things like earworms. You know, why does a song get stuck in your head and you can't get it out? I mean, that's another area of psychology that fascinates me with music. It's just, I don't know. There's so many different ways to go with this, and I don't even really know. I'm very unfocused with this episode. If you can't,
I love an earworm. Oh my god! I think the song is called "The Hunter" by Jess Williamson. Pretty slick, but it's one of her new songs on her new record.
Oh yeah, oh that's your most recent earworm.
Yeah, like, yeah, she's a hunter for the real thing. Oh, we're gonna get back to the subject, but
it's okay.
This is what earworms do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the chorus is basically, she's like, it's okay, I would have blown your mind, but I guess I'll give you space or whatever. I'm a hunter for the real thing. I don't know. There's just like these lines, I'm flowing them, but you just go listen to it.
I will have to check it out.
So far, I haven't found anybody who agrees on the level that I do, but like, the latest earworm for me. I wish I could explain it. I don't know why.
I get it, man. We all have those songs that were just like, it just hits, man, you know?
And it's different for everybody.
And then I play it over and over.
Oh, my wife hates me for that. I will get something, I'll get stuck in my head, and I'll have to listen to it several times in a row. She's like, stop, play something else.
It's a good thing about being single. Like, you know, it's like, my kids are over. They're listening. They're doing other stuff. They're like, you know, they're old.
Ear buzzing.
You said some other dope stuff. God, what did you say? And I took us all the way down.
Can okay. I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Just about your stuff where you felt like you hit on it. Was there a specific, did you identify like a specific, you know, vibration or note or, you know, range or rhythm or something that you guys were working with to make an album that hit what you're trying to hit? Or is it just kind of magic for you?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing, is that I know that there are people working with specific tonalities and even like, oh, it's not A440.
Right.
It's like 444. I forget 440. What is it?
A440, yeah.
I know, but there's people who are into a different tuning thing that they say is more essential and hits at. So no, we didn't do that. It was very intuitive. And kind of kismet, just the combination of the way our voices combine is eerie and just soothing to people. And even though I'm in it, I can hear it. like, even though I'm part of it, I'm like, wow, that's a weird thing. Some voices belong together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and not that we sound like this, and I think they're kind of gods, so I'm not making this comparison as to elevate us, but like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Oh, and then you add Young. Those voices are like magical the way they vibrate together.
Yeah.
And there's other people that you'll be like, wow, two great singers that don't sound good together. I'm not going to mention them, but like there's a lot of collabs these days because of the way it affects the algorithms and streaming and stuff.
Yeah.
And so you hear some out, you're like, oh, I want to hear those voices together. I'll be like, no, not really.
Not ever again. No.
Whereas like Phoebe Bridgers and the dude from The National.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great together. Phoebe and this other cat, I'm not going to talk about, not so good. He's great on his own. I don't, you know, like, so there's an alchemy there. We, for us, it was very intuitive. And also it was intentional because the intentional aspect was we knew we wanted to make something really dope and sort of healing for parents that parents would be into with their kids. And that would be like, bring them in the lullaby space. And that was it. And yeah. Then we did it. And it's like, holy moly. It just,
I think I need to get your record, man.
I mean, do you have little ones?
I got she just turned 8 and 10. Yeah.
Okay.
And it will work. Yeah. We got like
the records that are maybe more for the tweens, the more recent ones, which are like Whole Lot of Love is one of them. And Shout is the new one.
Shout, shout, let it all out. These are the things I can do without. Come on. Talking to you, come on. I really wanna shout your heart. Shout, let it all out. I really wanna be. These are the things I can do without. I really wanna come on. Break your heart.
Yeah, I think that.
Like 38-year-olds, like, she's like, I mean, they're both, you know, they're my kids. They're both very creative and very intelligent. The 8-year-old definitely could use some times, we'll say.
Some what? Some chill time?
Some soothing, some chill time.
Yeah. I mean, like, listen, you could try it. It's going to be, there'll be a quick thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah. You know? I hear you.
It's great. And so Renee and Jeremy just have a new album out, the Shout album. And it's just, it's really cool because what you guys do is so unique. I mean, you take these songs that maybe like I grew up with and you guys grew up with it, and you turn them into lullabies, which to me, it's psychologically, that's just a fascinating. I mean, you've done Red Hot Chili Peppers on the new album. You've got a song by Talk Talk, Tears for Fears, Steve Miller, Harry Styles. So it's
Curtis is my favorite.
Curtis Mayfield. Yeah. It's just
super cool.
It's really amazing. And it's, to me, psychologically, since that's the theme of this episode, it's fascinating to me to think of a song like Fly Like an Eagle or Shout, maybe even more so by Tears for Fears, and take a song that, while not as aggressive as something like Tool, is, you know, a little more on the aggressive side of pop, and turn it into something that you can play for your 8-year-old and it'll calm them down, or they'll get into it just as much as we got into the originals. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And that has become a very sort of self-conscious process. I mean, the sound that we have honed, which continues to evolve, that is one piece of it. And then we are also then tapping into what the words are and the message and having those unite. So, you know, in the case of Shout, Tears for Fears was actually singing. Those guys were in, I forget which, they were into Shout therapy, I think. I mean, they were literally into therapeutic modalities, and they were referencing it on that song. And we're ironically, of course, doing the incredibly quiet, chill version of Shout. But there's all sorts of people in Asia listening to it. Like, it's like very crossover. Like, it's not, they're not like, it's not hitting lullabies there. And we consciously selected pieces of those lyrics, like the I really want to break your heart part, to talk about, like, to evoke breaking your heart wide open. There's things that we're getting into now that, whether I think that they come across unconsciously at the very least, but that we're getting into intentionally when we're putting these whether it's originals. It's the one thing when you're writing the words, it's another thing when you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. You stumble on Fly Like an Eagle and you're like, wow, Steve Miller has had this sort of like behind that sort of boogie 70s funk thing, bluesy funk thing, was this message of like healing underneath, yeah. You know, like feed the babies who don't have enough to eat, feed the children with no shoes on their feet. Yeah. How's the people living in the street? Oh, there's a solution. You know, it's like this prayer.
Yeah. So. I think some of the best writing is, you know, it's reduced down to these basic elements that are universally understood by everybody. And therefore it's great lyrics for these messages for kids, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's all kinds of expressions that aren't like this for sure. Cause it's great songs that don't talk about this stuff, but yeah, I mean, there are these nuggets hanging out there in the songbook. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So Benjamin, you also have a new album out and it sounds a bit darker than some of the previous stuff.
Is that possible?
Wow. It's not like there's anything dark going on in the world.
Dude. No, of course not. No, everything's bright and happy. So this is going to stick out like a sore thumb. But
I got to hear it.
Oh man. It is so good.
Okay. I was kind of looking and I didn't find anyway. You'll send me links. So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Surprised you weren't able to find it, man. Huge, like huge.
Like Steve Miller, huge.
Yeah, I'm huge at my house.
in your hospital.
Yeah.
So
I love looking at the weird cities where it's like, oh wow, Goleta.
Goleta.
The northern part of Santa Barbara where UCSB is. Like,
got you.
Yeah.
So, Benjamin, do you in your day to day stuff, do you use music as part of the therapy, and does that influence what you write on your own?
I don't use it like at work for therapy.
Okay.
I certainly take the time to ask my patients what they're passionate about, what brings them joy and happiness, things of that nature that distracts them and provides them outlets. And you'll be surprised at how many people don't know what those things are.
Wow.
Yeah. So I do fully support like them investigating that part of them. Some of them knew when they were in their like teens and early 20s, but then they raised kids or, you know, had careers and they didn't spend any time with themselves. So they forgot, you know, I mean, literally forgot what they liked, which is bizarre.
Wow.
So, I do really push for them to feed their souls in whatever creative aspect that is. If it's knitting, if it's, you know, bowling, guitar, art, anything. Just find something that moves you, for sure. But for me, it's really personal. For me, it's the work that I do is pretty emotionally taxing. And I will not be doing this for the rest of my life. This is just one of a few careers I'll have because I don't have the capacity to continue to do this for much longer than 15 years. I think it'll just burn me up. So I come home and I use music. For me, it's this, you know, it's how I sustain my practice is to engage in writing and playing. Wow. So
I get that. I feel that that's, really heartbreaking to hear. And I'm at the same time glad that you're engaging at that level, that people are so disconnected from themselves in that way, you know, that they don't know what brings them joy.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them? was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
It's a trap.
That is amazing. But
yeah.
It's also good to know that you do know what brings you joy and you can see the light at the tunnel there. Maybe it's a train, maybe it's not, but you see it there and you know your time frame basically, and you know you're going to have to get out at some point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's a way you could practice psychiatry that would be, and I'm speaking just for me. I don't fit well into the westernized model of psychiatry in a way that allows me to feel sustainable in general. There is a possibility that when I, here's the rub, right? When my student loans are eventually forgiven or paid off and I'm not like bound by chasing after salaries to support debt that shouldn't really exist at the level I have, then I could practice in a way that speaks more truly to, you know, to me and be more sustainable. I think that I could do that. But the model that we live in is, I mean, the model we live in is completely dishonest, completely broken, misprioritized. I mean, it's really an embarrassment.
All of our institutions, my view, I mean, first of all, somebody like you, we just met, but it would be beautiful to have somebody with your orientation and experience on the Western side embrace like finding those other modalities and like and practicing and integrating, because it's like we do need functional, you know, like functional medicine, you know.
Yeah.
We need functional mental health and functional physical health. And it's all tied to all the other institutions. We don't have an institution in our society that is actually working.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
It might be working towards some of the devious purposes that like are either consciously or, you know, like structurally just baked in at this point, or like just sort of incentivized weirdly by profit and other things. Right. Yeah. But if you look at education, you got to be very conscious about how you engage with education, in my view. And music, entertainment, that business, I'm in it. Renee and Jeremy's a functional business. You know, it's like, if we're actually talking at the point where we're talking to labels and stuff, it's like a completely corrupted system. Like you have to be very conscious about it. And my kid's in the school system. He's got to be conscious. He'll be going into like, you know, JC or whatever next year, but he's got to be conscious about that. Our food system, which is connected to health and mental health.
Yeah.
What do we eat?
Yeah.
Hello, like seriously?
Yes.
I'm hoarding the good stuff, right?
Yeah, it's just an unraveling of the entire infrastructure of our society here.
Yeah.
It's not a very healthy and honest situation, you know, construct.
No,
not at all. And we saw that big time, of course, during COVID and whatever, but like, it's like,
yeah.
it's there at every level. I mean, that's actually interestingly the entire, I mean, so one, I said, I got into this Hazrat Inyat Khan stuff, but I had no practice. The way I actually got into a yoga practice and into meditation was that I had like a nervous system breakdown on the road, 1997, touring my first RCA record, like playing on Lollapalooza and having Korn basically like take my audience every day.
Yeah.
With their big thump thump. And like, I everything in that record went wrong. And I like literally like had this nervous system breakdown, and Western medicine was like, I don't know. You want some antibiotics?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I couldn't get off my couch, and like, it was like, my doc was like, hey, here's some antibiotics. I'm like, I don't think that's going to do it.
Yeah.
And that got me into like literally Kundalini yoga on the one hand and acupuncture on the other hand, and all these other things. And then circling back, it's like, it's interesting though, that it's just like that is, that's when I knew something was deeply wrong. Not that I wouldn't, believe me, I broke my shoulder last year running. I went to the friggin' doctor, you know? I went to the hospital, but then interestingly.
Good, glad you went, got it fixed.
Right, they're like, oh, okay, well, actually we can't do surgery on it. It's just gonna mend. And then he was like, oh, you've got nerve damage. That's the big thing. That could take a year. And I was like, well, do you think acupuncture could help that? And he was like, I don't know. Maybe. That was an improvement.
Yeah.
Maybe was an improvement on, like, no, that's some quackery shit.
Yeah.
And yeah. Acupuncture took care of the nerve damage in 2 weeks. But
wow.
Great.
A practice that has been around for
millennia. And there's no reimbursement.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had to see my guy. Luckily, he doesn't charge that much. Anyway, there's my rant.
So we can do this for a while. You got me. I mean, this is my... Yeah. I will say this in response to that. Just I feel as if I'm being dishonest most days of the week. And that's why I don't feel like I can sustain it, because it's not... Most providers went into healthcare to help people.
Right.
And when you're in the academic environment, it's not the same paradigm at all as the practice. And when you get out into practice, the elements that you have to deal with are so much more complex. And then the institutions that you work for are so much more complex. And the bottom line is not generally patient care. I mean, they say it is, but they have to support a business that's bleeding money. So that they have to see as many patients as they can. And
right.
The relationships that we maybe knew when we were growing up with our primary care providers is just not happening,
Right.
If you spend 30 minutes with a patient who's depressed, you might find out that their parents, dad was just laid off from work and they're not able to pay the bills and they have to sell the house and move in with grandma. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that makes sense. You're sad.
Yeah. Right. Right. That's hard. That's hard stuff.
Right.
All right. So speaking of hard stuff, both of you guys have had experiences writing in groups and solo, working with groups of people and working by yourselves. I guess keeping on the psychological tome here, is there a different approach that you have to take when you're working with somebody else and having to consider their opinions and their thoughts and about the work, as opposed to working solo? Do you take a different approach each way, psychologically speaking?
I would say I don't, like, psychologically speaking, I wouldn't even frame it that way for me. I would just, like, I mean, the human experience, right? Mm-hmm. That is psychology. The human experience is going to be different if you add another opinion and vibe into a circumstance. And depending on who you are as an individual, if you have interest and capacity and an openness, then you're going to be inviting that into the creative process, and it can be very productive. If you're depends on how your ego is set up. That can really influence the working environment with groups versus individuals. Yeah, so it's a challenge. It's definitely more of a challenge to work with people in that regard, just getting to know the pressure points and what you should let go of yourself and what you should invite in from others, and just that whole thing. And yeah. It's an intimate relationship.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like any group of people, I don't know where this comes from, but morphogenetic field is this term. But the idea is that, like, any group of people creates another personality.
Yeah.
Right. As a dynamic.
Okay.
That evolves. And so, like, bands or a duo, it's like, there's another person, like Renee and Jeremy has a personality that's beyond Renee and I.
Yeah.
And when we get together, the beautiful thing is that personality, and we tend to our relationship, and that personality is really healthy. And so that collaboration has a whole thing to it that's evolving. It's very different from what I'm doing now. There's a connection, but it is very different. It is also different to what I'm doing solo. And so I think it can be a beautiful thing. And, like, for instance, with Brad, this is no secret, but, like, the first record when everything was vibing and the weed was working, and really, quite frankly, to help I mean, I was like not really participating in that, but I was participating in the field. Like, it was helping to dissolve the egos enough where we were all just collaborating and this amazing thing came out between us. And then like second record, there's good things on it, but the group vibe, not as good. Yeah. And I know you can feel it, actually. Yeah. I know fans can feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. The room, the color that you give off, the vibe, the vibrations. I mean, you talk about vibrations.
Yeah.
It's palpable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes it's extremely powerful when those vibrations are not working well. Like if there's anger and there's, you know, ego trips and there's conflict that needs to be confronted. I mean, that can create some really beautiful situations for people to like break down their shit in music.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There are bands and records that are completely made from that, right?
Like, oh yeah. Sleep
rumors or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, go your own ways about Stevie.
Yeah.
Lindsay singing. And, you know, it's like, gotta have been
fighting in the studio without saying a damn word to each other.
Yeah.
Gotta be crazy, right?
Right. You know? Writing songs about somebody for them to sing.
The trip.
Yeah. That's fucked up, man.
Yeah.
Making Stevie Nicks sing a song that he wrote about her.
Ugh. And she had a choice to sing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like that to me is kind of miraculous. The projects that I've been in, like if the vibes aren't right, the music does not benefit.
Yeah.
Whatever reason. I mean, like some good things come, but like it's way better. I think that has something to do with me. Like I'm just not good at it. Like I can't fake the funk. Like it's like, if I don't love you, I can't really do it.
Yeah. I don't think you're an outlier. I think that the number of records that are made based on animosity are probably less than those that were built on love of your bandmate. Right.
Right. Yeah. I would think so. I don't get it. Like, I'm just like, how do you do it? Like,
yeah.
Well, and Benjamin, you have the added component of collaborating with your sister on some of this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's true.
So that adds a whole nother dimension to working with bandmates.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the fact that she was in Barcelona and I was in Vermont mitigated some of that stuff.
Distance.
Good point. Good point.
But no, I mean, you can have love and you can have conflict.
Yeah.
And, every single record, I'm actually thinking about Drew more than I am my sister, but yeah, my Amanda and I did pretty well the first record. Our conflicts, I think, were actually at like when we were in post. It was more just about kind of how logistics and organization of that process was breaking down and how communication over final product was kind of being handled. But during the creative process, it was, you know, I think we were very aware of each other. We were very aware of each other's feelings and very respectful. And it took us many years to get to that place. But I had more conflict with Drew than I did my sister.
Oh, okay.
Is this a band or is this like this your solo stuff?
It's really my solo stuff at this point. The first record was like my sister and I, she lives in Barcelona, I live over here, and we were like, it's a 6-hour time difference and it's hard to talk to people when they're, you know, I get them from work at 6, she's in bed. So it's just, we just never caught up.
Right.
And we just conscientiously, like, we're like, let's just meet on Sundays on WhatsApp and chat music and share ideas and maybe collaborate just for fun. And then it just kind of created, it eventually led to us being like, oh, we got like 4 or 5 tunes and let's just keep doing this and release a record. It's fun. And so probably we released it and I got a few random reviews that were good. So I was motivated and kept on going, but I was busy setting up shop. Like she does teaching for English and Spanish and stuff, and has her own creative stuff. So she kind of took her own path and I kept on doing this project, but I'll still ask her to like do some backup singing and she will contribute like one song per record if it works out. So we still work together, but it's more or less a solo project at this point. And the guy Drew I brought up is the producer I've been working with.
Got it. Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
So the new album, I think going back and listening to them, I think this is my favorite of all three. I'm looking at the track listing right now. A Million Miles is great, but Don't Give Up. And I love that song. That might be my favorite song of the three albums. It's just great.
And the heel can come too soon. Give up. Don't give up. Give up. Don't give up.
And I like the inclusion of like the children's choruses and the ambient noises on Broken.
Same horizon, the same old town. I think it's all broken. This all feels broken. I think it's all broken. This all feels broken.
That's a really interesting element, you know, bringing in ambient noises and bringing in children's choruses and things. You don't hear it much, you know.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite songs of all time, you know, Mother Love Bone used some children's choruses on what was it? I think it was Stargazer, right?
Oh wow!
Can't remember the title of it, but I remember the band and I loved them.
Yeah. That's something bringing in unusual pieces like that. It's not like bringing in an unusual instrument or something. It's bringing in, you know, a whole group of voices. So
yeah.
I think that's a whole different aspect to think about as musically and maybe psychologically. I don't know. I may be pushing it at this, you know, maybe trying to force a square peg into a round hole.
And everything's psychology, I guess. Everything's humanity. Everything's, we're all experiencing life, which is a part of all that, right? But
thank you for the bailout.
So I will say that my favorite instrument, I think, right now would be like, I love a chorus. I love like a legit chorus. And I especially love like kids' vocal, like a kids' choir. I just think it's got this angelic thing going for it.
Yeah.
But that song you're talking about with the kids singing, that song was written about it was written the week that Russia invaded Ukraine. Was about like it was just like my reaction to that, and I just thought it'd be powerful to have kids do the outro on that one, just because you know they're getting pretty forgot about in these ridiculous circumstances, and I think it's just kind of a haunting a haunting outro to include.
It is very effective.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky and uplifting. It's got hope and despair, I think, in it. I mean, but
well, the album has a lot of that.
Yeah, luckily I have two kids that'll do it, and their friends will sing with them, and they're cool.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, is cool.
So the album is really, like I said, I think it's out of the three that you've released, I think this is my favorite. I mean, Numb, you know, Can't Feel a Thing, that's a top, but definitely Don't Give Up is definitely my favorite, but Shoot Through the Wire, that's the latest single, I think, right? That is a fantastic song.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
And Renee and Jeremy, you guys, new music, like we were talking about, you got the Shout album with a mix of originals and covers, and it's just it's such a unique take on covers. You know, it's really fascinating what you guys do with, like Life Is What You Make It, Talk Talk. I never would have imagined Talk Talk popping up as a cover for honestly anybody.
I can't escape it. Yesterday's favorite. Don't you hate it? Everything's all right now. Everything's all right now. Baby, life's what you make it. Don't backdate it.
I love Talk Talk. And I do want to, I'll say something about that, but I do want to hop onto something that Benjamin was talking about too. I mean, Renee and I have very different, this is interesting. We have very different tastes in music. We have places where it intersects and then places where it goes like this. Like she has this whole soft rock 70s thing that I'm like. And then there's like all this probably like college rock, REM, like this just aspects of the things that she'll be like, that's too REM. I'm like, how is a melody too REM? I don't understand. You know, but I do understand because she'll like bring some Barry Manilow or whatever. So, but Talk Talk is a place where we intersect and we were just like, we gotta find a song that works.
Yeah.
And that song is weirdly, it's like the least, we tend to cover bigger songs just because it's kind of a way to tap into the cultural consciousness. Right. Yeah. And sort of like do our thing where we're like, hey, yeah, this is your hit song and we're going to do our like soothing, uplifting thing. But that song, Life's What You Make It, was like a minor maybe hit in England and probably nothing here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of doing really well right now, which is interesting.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's cool. I mean, I think I love our version. Like, so that's beautiful. But there were two things I wanted to say. One of which is that which Benjamin was talking about, like when, like considering elements of a song, I'm definitely thinking about the emotion that it's triggering in me. Maybe not before it goes down, but sometimes after the fact. Like we were in the studio the other night doing the song Better in the 70s for my solo. It's called Better in the 70s for my next solo thing. And there was like a guitar that was doubling this bass thing, and Joel Graves, who I was working with, did these cool effects on it. But when I was hearing it in the track, I was like, it was just bringing me down.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, it's really cool. And maybe there's a place for it in the song, but I was like, let's just take it out for now. It's song's sad enough as is. It's sort of mournful look back. Things were better then. Like, it's like, I want there to be some light in here. And so sometimes you just like, sometimes you put something down and you're like, you got to be the sort of, the
arbiter or referee.
Arbiter, conductor of vibe, right?
Hey.
Of vibe. And then the other piece is the people involved in the project. My mom is FaceTiming me, probably because I FaceTimed her mistakenly. Like, also these days, like when there's more choice, it's like, well, who's involved and are they bringing the right energy and conducting the vibe between us? Like my solo thing is like, there's a group of three of us and we've got the right energy for this stuff. And then it's like, we bring in some players, like the drummer from Father John Misty is playing some stuff remotely. And it's kind of like, I didn't know him, but our guitar player knew him. And Joel, guitar player, producer. And I was like, hey, is he the right guy? He's like, oh, he's a great guy. And so it's just like, for me, it's very much as much about, a lot of people can play these days, right?
Oh, yeah.
And a fair amount of people can play really tasteful, cool stuff. And are they bringing the right bava, the right vibrational stuff to it?
Yeah.
To me, I consider all of these things in the soup, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's like having, you know, a dinner party.
It is.
Interesting. I like that. Well, and Jimmy, you made a really interesting point in it. You loved what the guitar that was being laid down, but it was making you sad. So you pulled it out. I mean, you know, that's a definitely a mental choice to affect the entire tone of the song.
Yeah, this happened literally this week. It was one of those things where it was like, oh, I'll revisit it. I'm not 100% sure, but at that moment, I'll check in. Maybe we'll throw it. There's a place I'm thinking about putting in, but yeah. Because it's not that I'm afraid of darkness. I mean, I think that, and sure, Benjamin, it's like the solo stuff is taking people through darkness to light in one way. Renee and Jeremy's doing it in a much different way. Yeah. And so it's like, it's always about how is that process working for me? I can't be sure how it's going to react with other people. I just have to be the arbiter of that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, and that's why where I am at with making my music is that I have a different job that pays the bills. So for me, it really has to resonate with my vibrations. Right. I mean, it has to, if it doesn't vibrate well with me, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Well, both albums are fantastic. Renee and Jeremy, it's like you mentioned, Move On Up. That, you know, that's a killer take on Curtis Mayfield. And, you know, you also do Our House by Madness. Yeah. That's cool. I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, which I always think of the Coke commercials. So your take on it is a lot different than the Coca-Cola commercials from the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, those are like it's like we took that one and we darkened it.
Yes, you did.
Pretty dark.
It is. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to say that or not. So I was hoping, I'm glad you said it, because I didn't want to, like,
no, it's okay. I mean, we dance with those things. Like that, that was intentional. And Move On Up, I mean, Curtis's version is immaculate. There's nothing to say about it other than it's beautiful and so uplifting and energetic. And for me, it was like I had to convince Renee about that song actually. To me, the lyric is such a mantra of hope. And it's like there's certain, some people, I hope to stumble upon those things myself too, but like I think of Bob Marley and Curtis, and there's certain artists that they hit these moments that are just like, this is a prayer.
Yeah.
I know it's in a song, but it's a prayer.
Yeah.
And Move On Up is one of those things. And I like to think that in our version that like we hit this meditate, like I played it literally at this Yom Kippur ceremony, which is like one of like the, it's kind of like the deepest Jewish holiday. It's about literally like delving into sin and like, and how you can like, in confronting that and how you're going to approach that for this.
Yeah.
It's heavy. And I played that. And it was really beautiful. It felt, it could have been a liturgical song. It's in English. And
hush now, child, and don't you cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on up.
That's great.
See, to translate it into Hebrew,
going on and on.
Those moments are great, man. I mean, when you're in them and you're like swimming in it, that's.
Yeah, I felt like wow, this is actually. I mean, listen, I love what music does with out there in the world too. But I was like, wow, this is this small gathering and playing this song is why I do music.
Yeah.
And Benjamin, your album, like I've said several times tonight, it's my favorite of what you've released so far. You got some amazing stuff, A Familiar Face. You know, your album goes light and dark as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, of course, I've been getting a reputation for being melancholic.
We love some melancholy.
But I always challenge that perspective and say that I think that within that melancholia, I write in a space that the music can both be, depending on where you're at emotionally, can both be devastating, but also like uplifting. It just depends on where your head's at. So
like Good Night, Goodbye. That's a pretty intense song. I love the fact that it's kind of like split in two.
So actually the second part of that is Broken's reprise.
Okay. That's really cool. Cause I've got it as one big track and it's just, it has a little rest.
We actually split that and called it Broken Reprise, but I don't know. I don't know if it was because I had to pay more to get a master if I split it.
Oh my God. You got like the mastering fee per song. I feel you, dude.
That's amazing. That's the psychology.
Songs as long as possible.
Save on mastering. Yeah, the whole album is just one long song.
Mastering engineers are going to get a hip to that. They're going to start charging us by the minute.
Yeah.
Edit this part out. Don't let it go.
Okay. It'll be one big long beep.
No, we love our mastering.
Broken. It was supposed to be, Broken's very, very dark. And then that was supposed to be just a representation of the fact that darkness does have light and there's hope. And we just decided to put the very end of the record as like an outtake hope piece, an uplifting outro. And then the idea is the next record will start with that actually being a full song.
Mm. Oh, wow. I love that.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, obviously, I can't wait to hear your record, but like...
I mean, yours? Me too.
I'm psyched to hear it. Like, I went on a little thing with Renee and I will do these things on Instagram, like we'll just talk about some stuff. And I went on this whole thing about how like you need to put the sadness into the sweetness so you can really feel the sweetness. And because this is kind of the way life is, like we're going to get drawn into these emotions inevitably. Like, it's just the way it is. Like, we're going to get hurt by people. I mean, people will ultimate tragedy die, right? It's like, and so it's just like, but that's the nature of the earth plane. And like, sadness is in a way a seed of joy. You know, it can be.
Yeah.
It just depends what you do with it. And I think it's why, like, we can get drawn to artists like Nick Drake. I mean, that is some sad sack music, man, but it is beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It doesn't depress me.
I think that's a perfect example of another artist that his music lives in the middle of sadness and joy.
Right.
Just a matter of where your head's at.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there will be songs like For the Morning or whatever also, or like there's these songs that are just kind of like, and then it's like, I am the parasite of this town or whatever. They're like, whoa.
Yeah. I had a steady diet of Nick Drake between the ages of like 20 and 25. I fell in love with him.
Wow.
Yeah. All the good people.
Yeah.
Do.
I've taken up a ton of your time tonight, and I want to thank both of you guys for doing this and kind of, I know it was kind of scattered and all. I really didn't know exactly how I wanted to approach this. So I just kind of figured, well, we'll just hit as many different points as possible, but I want everybody to find out how they can find your album. So Jeremy, where can people find Renee and Jeremy, follow you guys and what you're doing and pick up the music?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It's Renee and Jeremy. That's that. It's everywhere. Like, we have a website if you care to go to it, but whatever. It's on all the streaming services.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy Toback, T-O-B-A-C-K. You know, it's like I've got some solo stuff that I've put out. Although that page is kind of dominated by Renee and Jeremy's music because it gets so many more streams. You have to kind of dig for my solo. Fine. It's a good problem to have.
And they can follow you on Instagram and...
Yeah. If you want to follow me on Instagram, then you'll get my, like, you know, stuff about radical forgiveness and Ho'oponopono and all that.
And your awesome photography. I love your shots.
Yeah, I'm trying to spread, you know, in this world of, like, there's so much clicks for anger and disagreement and hatred and, like, division. I'm really making a conscious effort to, for the most part, just put beauty, truth, and love, like those things out there as much as possible, and just
little shadow.
Yeah.
A little shadow of the darkness.
Your photos are bringing light into the darkness. They are very sunny and bright and positive.
Well, thank you, brother. Thank you. So, yeah, I'm around. You can find me.
Benjamin, how can people find your music and follow you and what you're doing?
Well, I'm on my porch right now.
Nice.
Come and get me.
In Vermont.
Yeah.
Nice.
Autumn in Vermont.
Yeah, it's actually a nice night. Finally, we've had too much rain around here, but we can sit outside today, so I'm doing it.
Betty Carter, that's a good song. But anyway.
But at Benjamin Jane Music would be, I think, for Facebook and Instagram. Benjamin Jane, you know, all streaming platforms. It's spelled Jayne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my parents spelled my sister's name a little bit different. So yeah. I do. You know, I think it's BenjaminJane.com. I don't. You know, again, I'm out there. Just go to the streaming platforms and search for Benjamin Jane.
I'm actually on BenjaminJane.com right now, and yes, that's it. So.
I'll be doing that.
So, and you're on the social medias at Benjamin Jane also?
Yeah, I mean, IG and Facebook, I think is those monikers would be at Benjamin Jane. Twitter is at Ben Jane Music, but I don't really use, I'm not really an avid social media person, but yeah. If there's anything that is relevant, it'll be there. It's
awesome. Well, guys, again, thank you so much. This is been really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, great meeting you, man. Great talking with you.
Hey, great meeting you too. I thought it was I had no idea what I was getting into, really, and I liked it.
Oh, good. I appreciate your faith.
You know, I'm kind of like unless it's like, you know, an invitation to like, I don't know, the Nazi party, it's pretty much yes.
Yeah. So,
I want to make clear, unless there's another.
Right. That's a no to Nazis. That's hard.
Yeah,
no.
unless they're like, do you want to change your ways or whatever?
Yeah. Okay. So if they're, hey, you know, we want to change our platform. You know, give us some ideas.
Kind of want to embrace some love and peace and harmony.
Yeah.
Let's get into it, man. Let's get into some radical forgiveness.
Nazis for love. We'll be some Nazis for love. I think I'm probably going to have to edit that part out. So.
Yeah, you can edit it out. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.